Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 9, entitled Dhruva Maharaj Returns Home, text number 66. Can everyone see this? Vikshyodha Vasanam Tam cha prakritinam cha samatam anurakta prajam raja dhruvam chakre bhuva patim. Vikshodha vayasam tam cha. Vikshodha vayasam tam cha. Prakritinam cha samatam. Prakritinam cha samatam. Anurakta pajam raja. Anurakta pajam raja. Dhruvam chakre bhuvapatim. Dhruvam chakre bhuvapatim. Vikshodha vayasam tam cha. Prakritinam cha samatam. Anurakta prajam raja. Dhruvam chakre bhuvapatim. Vikshodha vayasam tam cha. Apritinam cha samatam. Anurakta prajam raja. Dhruvam chakre bhuvapatim. Viksha,
Viksha,
after seeing,
Buddha
Vayasam,
Buddha Vayasam,
mature in age,
Tam,
Dhruva,
Cha,
and Prakritinam, by the ministers, Cha,
also,
Samatam, approved of,
Anurakta,
beloved,
Prajam,
by his subjects,
Raja,
the king,
Dhruvam,
Dhruva Maharaj,
Chakre,
maid,
Bhuva,
of the earth,
Patim,
master. Translation and purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. When, after concentration, King Uttanapad saw that Dhruva Maharaj was suitably mature to take charge of the kingdom, and that his ministers were agreeable, and the citizens were also very fond of him, he enthroned Dhruva as emperor of this planet. Responsibly, please. When, after concentration, King Uttanapad
saw
that Dhruva Maharaj was suitably mature
to take charge of the kingdom,
and that his ministers were agreeable, and the citizens were also very fond of him, he enthroned Dhruva as emperor of this planet. Although it is misconceived that formerly the monarchical government was autocratic, from the description of this verse, it appears that not only was King Uttanapad a Raja Rishi, but before installing his beloved son, Dhruva, on the throne of the empire of the world, he consulted his ministerial officers, considered the opinion of the public, and also personally examined Dhruva's character. Then the king installed him on the throne to take charge of the affairs of the world. When a Vaishnav king, like Dhruva Maharaj, is the head of the government of the entire world, the world is so happy that it is not possible to imagine or describe. I'll repeat that. When a Vaishnav king like Dhruva Maharaj is the head of the government of the entire world, the world is so happy that it is not possible to imagine or describe. Even now, if people would all become Krishna conscious, the democratic government of the present day would be exactly like the kingdom of heaven. If all people became Krishna conscious, they would vote for persons of the category of Dhruva Maharaj. If the post of chief executive were occupied by such a Vaishnav, all the problems of satanic government would be solved. The youthful generation of the present day is very enthusiastic in trying to overthrow the government in different parts of the world. But unless people are Krishna conscious, like Dhruva Maharaj, there will be no appreciable changes in government, because people who hanker to attain political position by hook or by crook cannot think of the welfare of the people. They are only busy to keep their position of prestige and monetary gain. They have very little time to think of the welfare of the citizens. Vikshodha vayasamtam cha prakritinam cha samatam anurakta prajam raja dhruvam chakre bhuvapatim. When, after concentration, King Uttanapada saw that Dhruva Maharaj was suitably mature to take charge of the kingdom, and that his ministers were agreeable, and the citizens were also very fond of him, he enthroned Dhruva as emperor of this planet. Mukam prati vachalam pangam langayate girim yat kripatam aham vande shri gurum nirutarinam. By the mercy of the spiritual master, a lame man can cross over mountains, and a dumb man can compose eloquent poetry. So politics, one of the things we're not supposed to talk about. So they are mundane politics, as Prabhupada talks about. The youthful generation of the present day, some of us have come out of that kind of background, very revolutionary, rebellious. Change everything, overthrow the government. But here we're hearing about real politics. And it starts with a qualified leader, or leaders. And what is the essential point or the essential quality in terms of leadership? I mean, there are many, but Prabhupada makes a point here. By conversely explaining the people who have interest, motivation to have political position and monetary gain, they have very little time for what? Thinking about the welfare of the people. So this is the quality of an advanced devotee. He's compassionate. He sees clearly how others are suffering, according to Bhagavad Gita, in relation to his own experience. He can perceive people's happiness and distress, all living beings. He's kind to all living beings. He's merciful. And he or she tries to give solace to the suffering souls by giving them Krishna consciousness according to their level of ability to accept it. I was talking to one guest yesterday, one visitor here from Calcutta. He's Rajasthani, but he lives and works in Calcutta. Very well spoken, obviously well educated, spoke good English. And he was saying, not exactly in a challenging way, but in a doubtful way, why is it that I can understand if you put God, you worship God, but you have this personality, Prabhupada, and you raise him up to a position as if he's God, and you worship him like that. How can an ordinary human being how can you put an ordinary human being in such a position? So your minds may be going berserk at this point, maybe thinking, how could, so my mind was all ready to just jump down this guy's throat and chastise him severely for even thinking such a thing, what to speak of saying it. And then I checked myself. I said, wait a minute. If I expect him to be on some advanced level, I may not be able to actually help him. Let me consider where he's coming from. In fact, not so many years ago, I was in the same mentality. So just, and consider how Prabhupada related to me. Did he blast me or jump down my throat because I had some doubts? And I was, as I was mentioning the other day, Prabhupada said, when you're preaching to university students, for example, first listen to them, because they have good intelligence, they'll feel respected, and then they may, because of their intelligence, they may open themselves to a better philosophy, which we're able to offer them. So, but first establish that, be caring, be kind, be compassionate, and consider what is the best for this person according to their level of consciousness right now, and what is best for them to advance to the next step in relation to Krishna. According to time, place, and circumstance, what is the best way for me to relate with this person? So Maharaj Uttanapati was very careful to check that Dhruva Maharaj was mature enough to take the position of the emperor of the entire planet. Was he fixed in devotional service, Krishna conscious? Was he caring enough? Was he compassionate enough? Was he able to actually care for his dependents? And that's the position of anyone in any position of responsibility or leadership or authority, whether it's mother or father, whether it's a spiritual teacher, mentor, guru, manager, preacher. And most of us are in some kind of position like that. And even if we don't have some official position like that, we have been given the mandate to become guides, to become leaders for others. According to our station, then Krishna gives us opportunities. I checked myself, I bit my tongue, and I said, well, yes, I reflected, I let him understand that I understood a little bit about where he was coming from, this guest. And I said, I understand from one point of view, it may seem, especially since he was also mentioned to so many people, so many gurus and swamis and incarnations being presented. And then sometime later there's some sex scandal or some fall down or some, and you realize actually this person wasn't what they were presented to be at all. I said, yes, you see so much hypocrisy, so much cheating in the name of God, religion, and spiritual life. How could we take the risk of putting our spiritual master up on a pedestal like that? So I let him understand that I understood where he was coming from. And then I said, and then he started talking, it must be a big leap of faith, big step of faith to do that. And I said, well, yes, but at the same time, many times people are accepting something blindly without having the experience. And I said, this is probably the main difference between Krishna consciousness and other religions or other spiritual paths today, is the application, because we have a process, a systematic, scientific, methodical process of bhakti yoga by which we experience the existence of God, and that the words of such a personality are efficacious. They give us experience of our own spiritual self and of the existence and presence of God. So from my point of view, because I've been struggling to follow this process for so many years, then for me, I have no doubt. I worship Srila Prabhupada like that, and I quoted Yasya Prasada, Bhagavad Prasada as well, because of my experience. So I'm not asking you to accept that. That would be blind faith. Blind faith is not very intelligent. But if you want to understand fully, or would like to get a sense of what is beyond your present experience, try this chanting, try this process. Have an open mind, give it a go, and see what happens. So we have some responsibility. Krishna gives us some opportunity to preach, to give Krishna consciousness to others, to ourselves and to others, by being kind and being compassionate and becoming like, try to be the transparent via medium. That we allow Krishna and Guru to flow through us. And when, the more we do that, then we can appreciate statements like what Prabhupada has made here. It's almost bewildering. When a Vaishnava king like Dhruva Maharaj is the head of the government of the entire world, the world is so happy that it is not possible to imagine or describe. So most of us, or probably if not all of us, have had some experience which in Krishna, especially in the beginning, I mean usually it's like that, we have some experience, kirtan, japa, prasadam, that is so amazing. We can hardly even imagine how it is or what it is, or we can hardly, we can't, someone asks us, how was that experience of ecstasy? How can we describe that? And we try our best, but... So Prabhupada is presenting to us here what will happen in this world, or what was happening. This is not fantasy. This is not just some nice story, metaphor, allegory, hyperbole. No, this was happening in the time of Guru Maharaj. That the people in this world, the entire world, Prabhupada says, become so happy, it's not possible to imagine or describe how happy they are. Now, I can't imagine or describe what Prabhupada means, but at least I can accept that it's indescribable and it's unimaginable. For me, that must be what the spiritual world is like. And Prabhupada does say, in different places, that if we spread the Sankirtan movement, this world can become like Vaikuntha. Do you believe it? Are you convinced? Prabhupada said, are you convinced? Are you really convinced? Because based on our realization and conviction, coming from our application of the basic instructions of the spiritual master, our basic sadhana, the quality, then the conviction will become so deep that nothing will deter us from being our best to be the leaders that Guru and Krishna want us to be, according to our particular station, whatever that is. Don't require some position or title to be leader. If you wait for that, then it might take a long time. Might be too long. So that is possible. And the conviction with which Prabhupada says this is so complete and perfect that we accept that. Now, how to apply that and how to understand how best to become leaders in our own position, our own situation, our own present is what we want to discuss and see what comes out in the association of other like-minded more advanced devotees, because we need to be enthusiastic, we need to be happy, we need to be enlivened. And if we see others, for example, who are not necessarily exemplifying this, we can become discouraged. We can become lethargic. We can become complacent. And that lethargy, that complacency, is one of the greatest enemies in spiritual life. Oh, this is just how it is. Can't do anything about it. Someone might even say, oh, it's Krishna's arrangement. Now, okay, sure, everything is Krishna's arrangement. But what if Krishna allows even the demons to do what they like? Then if he is allowing others, even as devotees, to do things which may not be the best for spreading Krishna consciousness, what do we do about that? And the other day we were on the disappearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada. We were quoting from that verse, is it 529? Where Vidarbhi realizes that her king has just left his body. And she begins, when she realizes that the body's cold and he's actually left, then she cries. And Prabhupada says two things. He says that it's the queen is likened to the disciple who was overwhelmed with grief and lamentation when the spiritual master departs from our present view. And he cries. There's no way to replace that loss. It's impossible to bear it. And that's why the sati rite was actually so prevalent and common in Vedic times. Even in this world, the wife felt so much pain being without her husband. She'd rather die. Now, can we conceive of that? Probably not. But that was real. And Prabhupada said the British stopped that because it was being forced on ladies when they weren't in that mood or wanting that. So, from the so-called material point of view, if it's possible that the wife can feel so much separation, so much attachment and devotion, dedication to her husband, that she'd rather leave her body than stay without him, we can understand a little bit how it should be, how it might be, for one who's very attached to the spiritual master and devoted and committed. Rather die because the pain is so great. So naturally one is crying. And Prabhupada says that in the purport that when the Acharya comes to establish a real system of religion, principles of religion, and when he disappears, then there's disorder. And what does the genuine disciple, the sincere disciple of the spiritual master do to rectify the situation? You remember what Prabhupada says? What does the sincere disciple do to rectify that disorder after the passing away of the spiritual master? What does he or she do? Do you remember? He or she strictly follows the instructions of the spiritual master. So that's the potency of following the instructions of the bona fide guru are so great that even when there is disorder, even when there are discrepancies, even when there are deviations, if we continue to follow, that will in time rectify the situation. Now, does that mean we don't take action, apply some tough love if we're in a position to do so with people who are devious? No, I don't think so. But the real point is one becomes exemplary oneself. And that power, Prabhupada said, even if I make one pure devotee, I'll be satisfied. So Prabhupada himself alone changed the course of history and continues to do so. So we can't even imagine, really, or describe the happiness, the potency, the power, the influence of even ourselves if we become like that. Maybe at the moment we can't imagine or describe it. And maybe we have so many reasons why we won't or we can't. But that lethargy, that complacency, is one of the greatest enemies to our advancement. Because without being utsahan, we can't really be fully engaged in devotional service. Srila Rupa Goswami says, Utsaha Nishchaya Darya, that enthusiasm is one of the requisite factors in being successful in devotional service. So we have to be very careful that we don't allow our minds, our excuses, our stubbornness, our whatever, to have that complacency, that lethargy remain. Now it's going to be in all of us. That's part of the material condition. And one of the reasons we're here in the material world, because we want the freedom without the responsibility. We want to do whatever we want and not have to answer for any of it. So as much as we bring that into Krishna consciousness, we want to do it our way. I did it my way. Even in Krishna consciousness, we want to do it our way without taking responsibility for what we're not doing or what we should be doing that we're avoiding. So the more difficult, sensitive, or scary anarthas within. We want to open our hearts fully in the proper association, so that whatever is allowing or causing the lethargy, the complacency, to be resolved, to be purified, to be engaged, to be transformed, so that we have nothing to hold. We're not holding back anything. Otherwise, the lethargy, the complacency remains, and we go along, we survive, we get by, we chant our rounds, do some service. We struggle. But that's not anything like what's being described here. Just surviving. That's imaginable and describable. We know it pretty well. Some of us, most of us. We know that just getting by, struggling a little, but doing our best, that will bring very different results. And that might be scary. What if I really surrendered? My gosh, I'd have to give that up. And I have to give the other up. And I have to do this or say this, or not do this or not say that. So King Uttanapad was very, although we're going to hear in the next chapter that King Uttanapad left for renunciation before he got Dhruva married. Prabhupada says there that although getting Dhruva married before he left was important, his own renunciation and advancement in spiritual life was more important. But we see here that King Uttanapada is making sure before he goes about the qualification and maturity and ability of Dhruva. His mood was that the welfare of the citizens is so important that I'm going to make sure my son continues in that mood, in that mode. Because the citizens are most important. He was caring. He was concerned. He was compassionate. So many qualities of the advanced devotee. He's respectful to all living beings. He's friendly, or she is friendly. Kind, merciful, humble. self-disciplined, meek, poetic. What are some others?
Doesn't need more than required.
Oh, good one. Thank you. Some others?
Silent.
Silent. Which means what?
Silent and nothing.
Yes. No prajalpa. No unhealthy political talk. Does that mean we pretend if deviations or mistakes are being made? No. But we're very careful. We don't want to be blind, but we also don't want to be, we don't want to be offensive or destructive. But we also don't want to be naive or blind. So how to find the balance in our practical action? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Bhakti Loka that discussing about faults or being critical for the sake of advancing in devotional service is not prajalpa. So for me, I think I have to look at my motive. When I talk about politics, if I do, what is my motive? Am I just wanting to criticize and drag down so I can feel better? Or present myself as knowing better and being able to do it better myself? Or do I actually want, am I talking with this other devotee or devotees because I want to find a way to help the situation, help that particular devotee or the overall community? Why am I talking about these things? So if we examine our motive, our motivations in talking about even politics, then we can say, okay, my motive is not healthy. So I either won't talk about it or I'll make it healthy. Better to make it healthy, and if you're in a position to do something about it, then do lots of talking. But those are some big ifs. Otherwise, we just go on. We actually perpetuate the problem if our motive is not healthy. And we don't necessarily have to be completely pure, but we should be surrendered enough to be analytic, critical. Become critical here first. And then you can become healthily critical with others. So, any questions or comments, please? Prabhu.
In the Bhagavatam, you have this contrast with Vena. What was his son's name? Was it Vena, the rascal king?
Yeah.
Vena, yeah. So you have the contrast that Vena takes position. You know, things are not that good. He's a rascal. Things even get worse when there's no king, when they can't replace him after they kill him. Contrasting to this situation where you have a good king, everything is wonderful. So it appears what's happening is by the presence of a leader, everything can become very wonderful or very horrible. Which makes me question, how does karma play into that? Because it appears as if one person is affecting a whole population, or in this case perhaps the whole world, where everything just gets better for everybody. And then one could argue, well, nothing will get better unless it's their karma. And all of a sudden...
Sorry, nothing will get better unless what?
Unless it's everyone's individual karma, because no one would suffer more than their destiny. And here it appears that perhaps they were destined to suffer in a certain way and they're not. Vice versa, perhaps they were not destined to suffer. And then you have a king like Vena, or an absence of a good king. Or you have so many scenarios, world wars and people being tortured. Then you have the story of Ramchandra Puri, where he committed an offense, and it said the whole village suffered because of his offense. So then one could make the same argument. Well, these people wouldn't suffer unless it was their karma. But then it appears, because of his offense, by connection, osmosis, they're suffering. So is there any validity to that? That beyond karma, people can be benefited or hurt beyond what they were destined due to the presence of a pious, righteous leader or impious, sinful leader?
So it seems, I think you're saying partly that it seems contradictory that apparently a pious or impious leader can affect the results of the entire world, all the population. But how is that it seems contradictory, because if karma is there, maybe they're suffering, they have that kind of leader because of their karma. Is that kind of what you're asking?
Well, do they?
Sorry?
Yeah, do they? And is there...
Do they what?
Do they have a leader because of their karma?
Yes.
Because in some places it seems that Prabhupada talks about innocent citizens. In other words, demoniac rulers are exploiting innocent people, and they'll run away, and he predicts they'll go to the forest to escape the taxes and so forth. So it almost makes it sound like it's all the fault of the leader, and the people are just protecting themselves from demoniac leaders, or they're being, it's the same question. You could say, what about the cows we save? Was it their karma, or was it our mercy? Or
yes. Yes. And to add something to that question, at the last sentence of the purport yesterday, if the head of the government is saintly, certainly the citizens become saintly. If the head of the government is saintly, certainly the citizens become saintly. And they are very happy, because both their spiritual and physical needs and hankerings are satisfied. So, what do you think? Prabhupada talks about if you engage in devotional service, I don't know if he says if you become a pure devotee, then 14 generations before and after become liberated. So is that their karma? I don't think so. Now I'm not going to pretend to be able to answer this question fully, because it's so complex. And I think what Prabhupada does many times is he focuses on one aspect of a question, one aspect of a discussion, of a point. And like here, he's in these two verses at least, he's making it very clear that because the king, in this case Sri Maharaj, is a Vaishnava king, that transforms everything. And relative to that, what I mentioned before, that if we spread the Sankirtan movement successfully, the whole world will become like Vaikuntha. Does that mean people's karma isn't there? Does that mean their karma is nullified because of the association and the guidance and the environment? Sounds to me like it is. Prabhupada says, even in the mode of goodness, you can change your karma. So what to speak of accepting the influence and the association of a great saintly Rajarishi, like Uttanapad or Dhruva. So let's have some other comments. Vasudev.
Hare Krishna. I'd like to ask a question about this doing things our way versus not.
I'd like to take a little more discussion about this question, because It's far from answered, and maybe it won't be answered, but if you don't mind, maybe give Nagari?
His question?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Unless you think I've answered it, because I don't think I have. I don't think I can, but fully. Maybe, could we have your question after that? We have some comments?
Sure.
Maybe, Gita Nagari?
Do you have comments?
If I may make a comment?
Please.
That it's a very important part, this kind of question that he asked. You know, why does this happen? Why does that happen? If this person's a king, does the karma change? So I always say that Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the intricacies of action and reaction are impossible to understand.
Yes.
And why this happens or that happens or something happens, or if there's a pious king, then that would happen. If there's an impious king, or if there's no king, this will happen. It's beyond our comprehension. We can't grasp it. But he says, right after that verse, that people have to know three things. What is karma, what is our karma, and what is the karma. So the point is, I think, that Krishna makes in that section of the Bhagavad Gita is that that even though we can't understand why things happen, we should always know that devotional activities are always auspicious. They're always auspicious. They're always karma-less. They always wipe out people's karma or change an atmosphere. They're beyond the modes of material nature. So if you have a king that's constantly promoting akarma activities, devotional activities in human society, then things like, was it their karma? Is it their karma? Becomes meaningless, because devotional activities are beyond the modes of material nature. They're beyond karma. They're akarma activities. Every time we chant Hare Krishna, this is beyond. It's beyond. And then, and even though we can't understand what it's going to do or how it's going to all play out, you know, we have to understand that these activities are always super auspicious. And other activities that are not in this line, vikarma activities, karma activities, karma kandi activities, they're not super auspicious. So when you have a king who's doing these kind of things, then it makes the whole atmosphere super auspicious. Mm. And then people's karma becomes a meaningless conversation, because Krishna, he can take the whole karma of the world in 1 second, wipe it all out if he wants to. He has that ability. He's beyond karma. So that's my answer to the question.
Thank you. Anyone else? One of the ladies, please.
Samala.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Prabhu.
There's a similar statement by Srila Prabhupada in another purport, where he says that if the king, if there's a pious king engages the citizens in an occupational duty, then again, once again, it can become like, I think he mentioned Dwapara Yuga, even in Kali Yuga.
I think Satya Yuga, isn't it?
I'm not sure, but he said that, the pious king. So what to speak of a devotee king, because if you chant Hare Krishna one time without offense, so much karma is gone. If you circumambulate Tulsi, so much karma is gone.
Hmm.
Of course, it won't happen overnight, this change, but it's not unreasonable.
Thank you. Yes, Maharaji. Wait for the microphone, please.
This is reminding me an example that His Holiness Bhaktisaru Maharaj gave when he was present here. It's one of my favorite examples because it's so simple. And he gave the example when iron is cold, dark, hard, but when we place it in contact with fire, fire is hot, fire is light, and is warm, and is soft. So the iron takes the qualities of fire. So when there is a leader, potently and spiritually of the highest characteristics, then everyone is affected in some degree or another. So.
Yes, thank you. That's also described, well, in Bhagavatam, the quality of the heart of one who chants, and their heart doesn't melt, or they don't cry, and actually their heart is steel framed, iron, cold, hard, dark. And in Nectar Devotion is described that the heart of the advancing devotee becomes softer and softer, ultimately like molten gold. So that the quality of care, of love that the devotee feels coming from Krishna is melting his or her heart. And that heart is so, and that heart, that mood, as Prabhupada traveled around, he carried that Vaikuntha bubble. He manifested that. So people were in his association. We were melting. Or anyone who takes that association now melts. It's not limited to time and place, because the instructions are that Vaikuntha bubble, that Vaikuntha atmosphere. So we understand the instructions. We receive that love of Krishna in that form, and our heart should melt. Everyone's heart melts if we're actually taking it, applying it properly and with proper guidance and association. Thank you. Yes, Maharaji.
I would like to make a little comment about the statement which Prabhupada is making, that a person who is mainly concerned about his own power and influence, he cannot think of the welfare of others. This is actually an extremely important principle, which we can also apply within ISKCON on all different levels, because this topic of devotee care is at the moment very relevant. I'm serving as myself in the GBC Committee for Devotee Care. So I think we can all take this to heart, that if we actually really want to cultivate a true culture of care in ISKCON, then maybe we all have to become a little less concerned with our own power and influence and position.
Yes, thank you. And how do we do that? Sorry?
Chant Hare Krishna.
Uh-huh. With what?
Love.
Without what?
Offenses.
Offenses.
Yes.
This is a very important point, and I think the part of the resolution, because it's very natural and automatic for the conditioned souls like us to be interested in power, position, enjoyment, money, etc. It's our you could call it second nature. It's how we are. So when we take the most loving association that we can find, then for me, I think we have a chance, or at least I have a chance, to give up my attachment to those lower things. And, by experiencing param drishtva, unless we get that higher taste, that higher experience, that higher rasa, and expand that, establish that within the core of our hearts, then the other will remain to some extent. It has a very strong, Prabhupada said, the desire for sense gratification runs like a deep black river through your heart. Yes, Prabhu. Microphone, please.
Karunanga. So just like the Shastra says, so many prayers of pure devotee, when I see you, sins go far away. Prabhupada said we shouldn't read magazines, particularly political magazines, because in those magazines are pictures of the leaders, and by seeing their faces we'll become contaminated.
Whoa!
You know, like sometimes you hear these, you read these stories of some sinful person or saying something and say, I've seen your face, I have to take bath in the Ganga. So there definitely, obviously, is an influence of association between purification and contamination.
Thank you very much.
And also, at a certain point, Prabhupada said, he told the servant, do not allow anyone to touch my feet because I'm getting sick, because I'm taking their karma. So there is a transference by association.
Yes. It's all Krishna's energy, and it's, in one sense, supremely powerful. We have desired, we're here because we want Maya. And she's, because of that, she's representing Krishna. She's like God here. And her potency is practically unlimited. So if we take that association, as you say, for example, by looking at pictures of the faces of materialistic people, that has a powerful effect.
There's another story.
Or talking about mundane things, or hearing or thinking.
When Prabhupada was ill in Vrindavan, Kaviraj came. So he came in, and Prabhupada asked him, Krishnamurti, so what do you think? And he really didn't, the Kaviraj didn't do much at that point. And he said, I really don't know. Well, Prabhupada said, well, you saw his face. So you saw his face, so what do you think by seeing his face? Is he genuine? Is he... So now everyone's going to go around, right? Judging everyone by their... looking at their face. So I know what he's like. And also that story, when some astrologer saw Prabhupada's picture, he said, here's a man who can build a house in which the whole world can live.
Yes.
Just by seeing his face.
So we're in a very, very precarious, dangerous position. Does that mean we should shut down and go to the Himalayas and just chant 64 rounds a day? No. No.
At least for a while.
Prabhupada did not recommend it. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati also did not. He said, you become qualified expert preacher according to your station, according to your situation, your country, or wherever you are. And there you get the mercy of the Panchatattva, which is the ultimate answer to all these problems, all these challenges. Because Lord Chaitanya is the mercy incarnation. And the spiritual master, the bona fide spiritual master, is considered more kind than Krishna. Because he comes and he gives you whatever you need, and he tolerates anything and everything, practically. All our madness and all our mistakes and all our deviations. So we practice to please him. Spreading the Sankirtan movement. There was another nice question, but should we take it or should we finish? All right, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, very interesting. I have a sense this is also interesting, the idea of doing things our way or not. Because we have the example of Srila Prabhupada, who apparently did not follow the order of his spiritual master right away, or he waited a long time apparently. And he did not follow the Gaudiya Math, he did things his way in many ways. And someone was suggesting, Urmala Devi Dasi in Belgium when I was there recently, she gave a class mentioning that in this movement, those people who have shone, who have, you know, shining, exceptional preaching ability have usually and often done it their way, in a way which had not been done before because no one did it. So they had to innovate, they had to find a way, and they had to do it their way according to their own creativity, as opposed to doing things the way things had been done before. And some people insist on sadhana, for example, and they, you know, they're very particular about chanting and doing sadhana, but they may not follow other instructions strictly, especially in the area of preaching. And we have sometimes preachers, they are very powerful, but they are not so particular about their sadhana, or their sadhana suffers as a result of activity. So could you please say something more on this, or maybe anyone else?
You have 3 hours. I would make it more of a discussion, but this, I think this is too big a, it's very, thank you for the question, the point. Yes, Prabhupada did it his own way, in one sense. In fact, if you really look at the situation closely, he was like a rebel. Ostensibly, he disobeyed the orders of his spiritual master. He left the institution, apparently, that his spiritual master, he did not do anything to create a GBC, whatever, however Srila Bhaktisiddhanta described it. And yet, the result, the long-term result, was that he did do that. And he did it, practically, he was probably the only one who did do it. So we say he did it his way, or I do it my way. But that is not, that cannot be independent in that sense. It has to be, according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And that then we have, it requires that we become a little discriminating or intelligent to understand how that any particular individual is applying that. And the results often will be the proof. Now we also have to be careful, because on the way to getting the results, there may be so many questions. So the flexibility, I mean, Prabhupada, he was the epitome of encouragement. He sent some of his first disciples out to open temples after being with him for a few months. But because the connection, the love, that respectful, loving relationship was there, and because of his supreme conviction that Krishna consciousness was so powerful that even we monkeys would make so many mistakes, that if we stuck to the process of chanting 16 rounds a day, following the regular principles, always engaging in devotional service and keeping an association, we would be rectified. The process itself is so powerful that we would be rectified as long as we stuck with it. And therefore, even sometimes when sannyasis fell down, he was not happy if they were criticized or condemned. He simply wanted to see how they were still engaging in devotional service in the association of devotees. That's just one example. So it's a whole realm of science and understanding that discussions like this will help us, I think, to understand. If there was more, if it wasn't so late, I think it's important to open up this discussion further, because there's many devotees with many different understandings and realizations, which would broaden our vision, I think. And that, for me, that's why Ishta Gosti, for example, is so important. To get together on a regular basis to discuss the instructions of the spiritual master. Because of that, out of that sadhu sangha, Krishna enters into that sangha and manifests inconceivable things and realizations and understandings and resolutions irresolvable problems. So, because if we continue to expand and increase the quality and the application of Prabhupada's instructions, everything will come, even though it seems so difficult now. or sometimes impossible. The management's like this, and I can't do anything about it, blah, blah, blah. There's, oh, sorry.
Just a,
yeah, just a short comment on this, that actually the deviations, of apparent deviations, were never deviations from the heart. They were external deviations in pursuance of the orders of the spiritual master. And that's what makes the difference. When the heart is set on following the instructions,
and then the deviations are only an appearance of deviations. And then
yes,
the importance is in the heart, not necessarily in the form.
Yes.
So the heart is always sincere in following the instructions of the Guru.
Yes. Apichet Surasha Prabhupada says, maybe sometimes because of worldly-mindedness, one may deviate or fall down, but if that person continues in that mood, that mode, that in devotional service, which is more than just external, then he or she is considered saintly. Does that justify deviations? Otherwise, no. But that's a mood, I think, that you're talking about. What's there in the heart? Hare Krishna.
I just make a comment from Vasudeva Prabhu's question that my way could be the details. There's principle and there's details. So Prabhupada never broke any principles. He was ordered to preach. But the way he did it was the details were his way. So we can see it as being like, my way is the detail.
Yes.
We don't deviate from the principle.
Yes. So he was fully committed to carrying out the orders of the spiritual master. Like Mataji was saying, the mood, the commitment, the focus, ekeha krunandana, was unchanging, but the externals, either with deviation or with application, may be different and may be called my way. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki, Kantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Gaurav Vimananda.